Thanks. Would it be better down, where do you prefer your speaker? Here is okay, so everybody can see me? All right, well, great. Well, I want to begin, first of all, by saying thank you. I see some familiar faces here, some great leaders, one of my policy leaders, Dr. Diana Mason in the back. I just know of the great work she has done. She's taught many, and you all are doing so much, not only to teach others within and outside of the profession, but also, very importantly, that we are lifelong learners as a profession in this process of increasing our voice, our influence, and our impact, not just, as Dr. Mary Wakefield said to me quite a few years ago now, not just for our special interest, although that's important, but more so for the public interest. So I want to begin by saying that. Also, the prior speaker spoke about chocolate. I know wine goes well with chocolate, and you have a reception at 5. So I'll try to cover a few key points, and then I'd like to have enough time that we could open it up for questions. The big one? Oh, no, I'm moving the wrong one, maybe. There we go. You all are familiar, but the AACN commercial, if you'll pardon for one moment. But it's very important that we are, as of course we're the voice for academic nursing, we now have 800 schools. Most of the other health professions do not have that quantity of schools and or the number of students and or faculty. So it gives us an opportunity. I see another familiar face over there. Gives us an opportunity as a profession to think about, you know, our voice, we have the ability for even greater amplitude than maybe what we've exercised so far. Not we, AACN, I mean, we all of nursing, but certainly with our academic leaders. So we have now, when you look at our numbers, over 457,000 students and 18,000 faculty. And again, it started, many of you may know, or some of you may not, as the Dean's Club. Some still think it is. Our member is the institution, the school. But our membership are deans, faculty, and students. So I'm going to share a little bit about some of our work, which you may or may not be familiar with. But also, those of you in the room who know me and those of you who don't, I think will pick up pretty quickly, I have an extraordinary passion for not only the opportunity, but the responsibility that we have as a profession to continue to do more in the policy arena. This slide said an educated citizenry is vital, requisite for our survival as a free people. And I would contend we do not have an educated citizenry around health policy. And it's not anyone's fault per se, but when you look, and this happened during the forming of the Affordable Care Act, and I'm pretty sure it's likely to happen with whatever changes next, you ask the American public what the best source of information is to them about health policy, it's the media. And now I think the answer might be even the social media more so. But we don't get unbiased sources of information right now. So we have a responsibility to do our part to try and, one, make sure we're an educated populace and that we share it with others. I was giving a talk, this was during the shaping of the Affordable Care Act. I had the opportunity to be a fellow in the speaker's office, and I had been invited to Canada to talk about the formulation of the legislative language and then the law. And the night before my talk, somebody sent me, I didn't watch Jimmy Kimmel, but they sent me a clip from Jimmy Kimmel show that I actually put in my presentation, and it was about an informed democracy. They asked the American public, they went around and they asked people questions about Obamacare. And they got some pretty, if any of you remember, some pretty strong and clearly negative about Obamacare. They then asked questions about specific provisions that were included in the legislative language at the time, law, and became law. And they said, what do you think about those? And people loved those, thought those were great, those were important. They said, what would you say if we told you that was Obamacare? Most everybody said, no, wouldn't have believed that. So I'm not defending any particular piece of law and or what was legislation, because anyone, even supporters, would say it's imperfect. There is one of the big sayings that I heard often on the Hill, and we should keep in mind always in policy, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. That doesn't mean to say, though, that we should excuse ourselves for imperfect policy. But anyway, in that, I think we have a strong and continued responsibility to be ourselves and help others be an educated populace. Because the last part of that Jimmy Kimmel series, so it was very clear, and I want to say not in my backyard. I have a home in Baltimore, and there was a guy interviewed that had an Orioles cap on for baseball. And I'm like, oh, it was in my backyard, too. You want to think that that just doesn't happen in our neighborhood. And he was one of the uninformed about it. But anyway, then they came back to all of these individuals, and they said, how important do you think an informed populace is for a democracy? And it was overwhelmingly, everyone believed that. So again, our challenge in figuring out how to do that. So I want to share, some of why it's moving here. These are some of AACN activities that you may be aware of. We are one of many members of a community within and outside of our profession that care about doing more to create an informed citizenry. And so I would like to share some of these very specific examples. You may be aware we have a grassroots network of over 11,000 deans, faculty, students, and other stakeholders, as you can see. We are really clear many times in policy, and we've got to work always to get better at this. How can we be nimble? How can we make sure that we get information out to individuals in a timely manner and that we mobilize responses as needed also in a timely manner? So we utilize an action alert to accomplish that. We also have an update, as you can see, that sends out updates on policy and advocacy issues. And the opportunity to receive these is greater than our membership, but our primary reach initially has been to our members. And then we've recently updated a bit, but have always provided some updates. We're now doing a weekly, you may or may not want to know what's happening, quote unquote, inside the Beltway, but ways that we believe it's our responsibility to share that information with, again, our membership and broader community. So when we think about the community, on these, and many of you may be familiar, I'd like to give a shout out. And if you would, those of you who have participated, we have a faculty policy intensive, we have a faculty policy think tank, we also have an advocacy council and a student policy summit. So any of you in this room who have been a participant in any of these initiatives, that's great to see so many. Thank you. We continue to evolve programs because, again, as I said, there's different levels of opportunity for each of us to learn and to engage, and we want to continue to build upon all the successes that we've had before. But it again, is about bringing ourselves as an individual and most certainly as a profession to be very informed about these matters and issues and then be able to think about the relationships. When I think about influence and influence on policy, and I'm preaching to the choir here, it's not just the information about whatever the problem is or whatever the action is that we want to fix. It's how we communicate that and to whom, and it's what kind of relationships we build, both within and outside of Congress. And I think when I was a health policy fellow, we were told to come up with a few talking points. And for me, the three key points, if we're going to think about our effectiveness as leaders in advocating for better health and healthcare, which is what we are all about, then it is about the information that we bring to bear. It is about our communications, and we must continuously do better. And who do we need to build relationships with within and outside of government? I want to take a moment to do a little bit of a deeper dive in the faculty policy think tank, and you may have had a chance to review these slides ahead of time, but we're looking at, as you can see here, the opportunity to investigate some challenges, think about what strategies, and then ways that we as an association we need to know more about what we can be doing to provide and support faculty. So this is ongoing, this work is never done, but this has been some great, the think tank work will conclude with some really strong recommendations, but we again expect to continue, all of us, to do always be improving and looking at where we've made some growth as a profession with respect to our advocacy efforts and our, in some cases, lobbying, but I'm talking mostly now about advocacy. What policy issues are important to nursing? We live in the space of healthcare and higher education. So we need to be pretty vocal spokespersons about policy in each of those levels. Now, the games change, the politics change, but I think what doesn't change is that it really indeed, I believe very strongly, is our responsibility. So students, You know, I have been so encouraged by the excitement, the energy, and I know many of you see it with our students. I've been a part of it my time at Hopkins when students went down to Annapolis. They get the attention. When I was a health policy fellow, they're like, the nurses are coming to the Hill today. But they didn't do it all in a negative way, but just because there were so many of us that were coming. But it really does make a difference to be able to have the students not only have those experiences for themselves and their own professional development, but it opens up the eyes of others. When I was a health policy fellow, I had the privilege, and it was a little bit less stressful, to prepare people for testimony. And then when I first came to AACN, I had my really first real opportunity to be on the other side of the table. And we were there to talk about Title VIII reauthorization and others, but so it was an interprofessional panel. And you know, some of my recollections of that, first of all, we did our homework and we were prepped. And we knew that on both Republican and Democrat side, there wasn't going to be opposition to Title VIII. They got it. They believed it. They supported it. With that said, knowing that we had that support, there were still numerous questions that were raised by the committee members. And what I was excited about, I'll tell you first, the part I wasn't so excited about, you're always like, okay, what's the next question? Am I going to be able to answer it? And of course, you know, we all know this. If there is something you wouldn't know the answer to, you know, you would, of course, just get back to the member. But what I want to say is that in addition to that, I was so impressed with how informed they were, that we've come a long way as a profession in helping members of Congress, but it's not just at the national level, but in this example, at the national level, understand. I mean, people were asking me really, I think, higher level questions about nursing education than they had asked in the past. And I don't recall all of those questions, but I remember I didn't anticipate that we'd get a lot of questions. And pretty much to a T, I think there were many members of the committee that did, and they were interested in higher education. They wanted to understand more about graduate education and recognize that the critical role that nurses play in our efforts to transform the system. Well, some would argue we don't have a system, but I think to transform clearly the delivery of care, and again, to realize better outcomes. So for our students, I mean, at all levels, and it extends, I think I've said it multiple times, but many in this room, I believe, would agree, we must certainly advocate for those issues that directly and policy needs that we have for us as a profession. But if that is all we're talking about, our voices aren't going to carry very far. We might get accomplished what we need to for ourselves, but we have got to be able to speak to some of the greater needs. We didn't put it in this slide, and my staff will probably shoot me, but I always love to talk about in 2009, there were 4 Robert Wood Johnson Health Policy Fellows that were nurses. And so we had the opportunity to meet with the nursing community. And these are leaders in our nursing associations at the national level who are working to make sure that others are informed. This was the Shaping of the Affordable Care Act. They, as other health professions, were a little bit disappointed that most of the people coming to the table, and I was shocked, and so were my other fellows, wasn't as much health professionals. There were economists, there were people from the pharmaceutical industry, and not that they shouldn't be there, but I was expecting a greater visible presence of health professions. Now, we got that over time, but we didn't have it initially. And one of the very effective strategies that happened after a conversation with our colleagues was that AACN led an initiative that has now grown to be, I think I do have that slide in here, but the nursing community. And the nursing community came together in 2009, developed a document that was a consensus statement on what the nursing community believed was important for health reform. And I think you might have reference to that or have already seen it. I can tell you for certain that I was in the speaker's office. Doesn't matter who the speaker is, whether you like them or not, they set the agenda for what's going to go to the floor of the House, and they're very instrumental in working with the colleagues in the Senate. And I can tell you that document had legs and it got traction. Now, I'm not naive, and I don't think anybody in this room is either. Many times, members of Congress seek out documents that support their positions. And we happen to have in that document some important, there were some important statements about nursing and care coordination, and so issues that resonated with members of Congress. So the point that I want to make is that while we want to have individual competence, we have to have unity of voice. And we haven't always had that as the profession. We don't have to agree on everything, but on certain things when we advocate, if we do not have unity of voice, then we will be discounted. I'm not hopeful, the nursing community is working on an update of that, and no one's really sure how the game is going to be played in Washington for the next 4 years, but we will have a document that will be available and be provided to members of Congress. Now, again, it's one strategy. It is not the only strategy, but I just wanted to emphasize the importance of, because I think about that, that was education to scale. That's being able to provide some information, you know, making that information readily available to members of Congress, and it was very clear on some specific asks that the nursing community wanted. So I think we learn from our past, and so we learn what was successful, and I believe, and I think most everyone in this room would agree, and certainly beyond, the next decade in both healthcare and higher education is likely to be two T's, turbulent and transformative. And this is, in my mind, it could be a reason that you want to go and hide and hide away for a while, but I think not. I think this is an opportunity where then perhaps we can create openings, our foot in the door in places that we may otherwise not have had. Now, if you can't tell, I'm an extreme optimist. That's how I go through life, but it's balanced in reality. And I want to share a quote that some of you have heard from me before. How are we on time? Some of you have heard from me before, but I think it's very important, and it still always makes me smile. When I was taking my PhD program, we had a health policy course that was about the theory of health policy. And one of the books that and we got books then, I know sometimes it's not that way anymore, but I purchased a used book by Kingdon, and it was on the policy streams. On the inside cover of my Kingdon book, somebody had written, in quotes, without naming the source, a quote that I would like to share with you. And that is, politicians use research and data much like a drunk uses a lamppost for support rather than illumination. And at first I was like, oh, but you know, so, and I shared this with not too long ago, a member of Congress, and like, yeah, you might have a point there. But I think, you know, as long as we're sure that what's in those kinds of communication or information that we as a profession believe are important for, the health of the public, improving healthcare delivery, and where we need to, too, advocating for higher education, because there's going to be a lot of opportunity there as well. I think that that's very important. So mentoring, all of us should be a mentor, and I hope each of us has a mentor. This is a lifelong journey that we are on. If anyone tells me they've mastered it all, then I have to look at them, because there's just so many changes that can happen within the political climate, and when I talk policy, I've been referencing some of my experiences nationally, but I think of institutional policy, what we do within our institutions and how we contribute there, either in academia and or in the care delivery system, how we make policy changes, and a lot, you know, needs to be done at the state level. I was at a meeting the other day and someone said the way we're going to move, one of the ways that we're going to hopefully move Washington forward is have these conversations locally, and then those members come back with maybe a bit more passion about whatever that particular topic is to have that conversation nationally. But we will be learning along the way. But mentoring students, I mean, this is our future generation. And so what I don't want to see, and we have seen this sometimes, where someone said to me one time that an engaged student in policy was told by a respected healthcare leader, I would call a person a leader, and we don't really have that much to do with policy. You know, other people do that. And the student was it was one voice, but there still are some that think policy has nothing to do with me. We don't all need to knock on a member of Congress's door. We don't all have to have our stump speech, but we all need to be articulate about the value of the profession. We all need to think about and be able to help others see how we are a vital part of the ongoing dialogue to find the solutions. There's no one. And I'm excited if we're going to have an improved health policy that's going to come out of this next administration. No one has the perfect magic sauce, so to speak. But we, I know, if we're at the table, because you can look, there were over 40 provisions in the Affordable Care Act. I don't know that that would have happened without, in addition to all the great advocacy work, the document that was referenced by many. So we have to think about, again, learning from our past and our strategies. Oops. So I love to learn from our past, and many of you may know this, but this is a quote from Florence Nightingale's book on, many of you may have this book, but I've learned a lot in my policy journey, but I can say I'm not yet where Flo is, and this is what her quote is. When I entered into service here, I determined that happen what would, I would intrigue among the committee. Now I, and she used the word a little differently than I think we use it today, but she says, now I perceive that, She says, now I perceive that I do all my business by intrigue. I propose in private to A, B, or C the resolution I think A, B, or C is most capable of carrying in committee, and then I leave it to them, and I always win. I can't say that last part yet, but I think what the wisdom of one of our greatest leaders is that we cannot do this alone. We must be resilient, and part of that resiliency, again, is educating ourselves as individuals, ourselves as faculty, and working to help assure that our students and then beyond have the information to not only understand these complex problems, but appreciate our role in helping solve them. So I think I'm done, and I know some of what I do is preach to the choir. We purposely allowed enough time. Your reception is at 5. You don't have to ask questions all the way up until then, but I really wanted to have a chance for some dialogue and more discussion about some of what your thoughts are for these opportunities. And I'm sorry, I'm looking to the back, and I should mention again, while I talked about the nursing community, which is now over 60-some members, the work of all the associations, the Academy, I'm sure you've heard about much of the work at the Academy. We are a collective force. And what we, I think, all of us, I can say from the association CEO group that's been meeting, you know, we recognize that we don't all have to do it all. We need to think about how we make sure that the universe of what we believe nursing should be contributing to is covered, and then divide and conquer so that we do allow and support each other's initiatives. So, you know, one of the words that AACN's been using as a part of our strategic plan is about information curation. You know, quite simply and fundamentally, to me, that means what information do we need to make the kinds of decisions we need to make today broadly, and then how do we assure that we, and in particular AACN, our members have that information? We don't have to be the genesis of all that information. We don't have to be the one that produces all their reports, but we have a responsibility to help connect our membership to that information. And I would suggest that you, on your, in your worlds, have an opportunity to do the same. So now I'll take questions, comments. I know, you want wine and chocolate, don't you? No? All right. Well, okay, wait. That's fine. Thinking is fine.
So, Deb, yes. Thank you. That was great. And this is a little bit tangential, perhaps. Okay. But one of the things I've been, you know, in trying to make sense of what has happened over the recent past, I came across the statistic that 28 to 30% of the population has more than a high school education. Mm-hmm. And that was stunning to me. Now, I was teaching in a public institution where our tuition was $14,000 a year. There are private institutions in New York that were $60,000 and $70,000 a year. Even the 14, so we were a bargain. Mm-hmm. Even with $14,000 a year, there was recently on our National Public Radio station a student talking about how he had to sit out a semester. He couldn't graduate because he owed money for tuition. And so I'm really concerned about what's happening with the cost of higher education, and I'm concerned about to what extent Is nursing using its voice to say, if we want a healthy population, we must have an educated population, mm-hmm. and the cost of university, of higher education, has to be a factor in all of this, mm-hmm. and we must mm-hmm. take a look at yes. access
yes. to higher education. It's an excellent point, and I would remind people, many of you may have seen it, I'm sorry I don't remember the year, but not so long ago, the Milken Institute came out with a publication. And the bottom line of that publication was education matters. And what they showed was that the GDP in the community increased by just simply having 1 year of college education in that community. So I have a couple of flight of idea thoughts with respect to your comment. And while I think we have been doing some work in this area, and I'm not being critical of any one of us, but I think there's much more to be done. Every single institution of higher education, not separating out healthcare alone, but certainly us, are going to face increasingly more pressure to demonstrate the value of that education. And we have some new players who have maybe different views about where the focus should be. So I think we're going to need to be increasingly more articulate about the value. We're also going to have to address the concerns that come and are associated with these high costs. I was at a meeting just the other day at the National Academy of Medicine on clinician, not just medicine, but resilience and well-being, and there's a high number of suicides that are directly connected to the debt. I mean, there's other factors, but that's another. So there are unintended consequences on the one hand, but there is significant value, and they're not, it's not a just black and white in respect to the way I just described it, but I think we have to continue to make the value proposition, and I think we don't do it alone. I mean, we work with the other health professions, but even though there's different issues, with respect to higher education, and then the crosswalk, and we have that data. We've got the data in nursing education, but there's some other challenges. We've got some data that says education matters in nursing, and in some parts of the country, though, we have some supply and demand problems, and then we're hearing from some of our nursing practice leaders that they're concerned that these strong positions that they believe in, simply because they don't have enough, may create challenges. So that reminded me of one point I failed to make in my remarks when I talked about coming together. Academics and practice must work closer together. AACN hosted a conference in October. I was so excited, it was wonderful. And it was shocking to me, though, that how much we don't know about each other's environment. So on multiple levels, but AACN is looking at and thinking about how do we have closer connections with our practice partners. We have a great report, The New Era for Academic Nursing, and it talks about what we need to do, but what others need to do. And I will also, just a couple plugs, and then I'm going to go to Linda, is that we have in the AACN's board met yesterday and today, and we are now inviting, we have practice leaders come and participate in a part of that conversation. AACN and AONE, the American Organization of Nurse Executives, have decided that we're going to come together in a more purposeful collaboration so that, again, working with all the communities are important, but some real purposeful initiatives so that we're not only trying to solve current problems, but we're more proactive in trying to co-create the future. So, did you want to add? Because you probably have a comment or two to that.
I had to jump up because as a dean from a public institution that used to be funded by the state, mm-hmm. that was publicly funded, but is now assisted for a very, very small percent. Right. It's not fair to talk about the cost of education right. without looking at the funding model of education.
Yes.
And what we've seen in this country is the defunding of public education.
Yes.
And that's where we need to advocate.
Yes.
That's where we need. Yes, we need to do value added. Yes, we need to make certain that we have the least, the leanest, whatever, the way that we're teaching. But we need to look at the core, and that is the old view, which was the worldview that the government viewed that it was important to have an educated public.
Right.
and the New View is not, it's not supporting it.
We've always had our work cut out for us, but we have our work cut out for us in ways that we did not imagine. I'm not asking you to say whether you like it or not. That it doesn't matter. It's the reality of the world in which we're working. And we have a pot that's not likely to get a whole heck of a lot bigger. So that's going to create some other challenges. You know, we've, and many of you I know, with respect to, for example, funding for research. Of course, we're a profession that needs to continue to contribute to discovery. The pies in NIH, certainly AHRQ, PCORI, I mean, some key places, they're under tremendous threat as well. So again, being a spokesperson, being articulate, and talking about and thinking very clearly on that strategy for those funding streams. And more than ever, I believe we're going to need to remind ourselves that incremental policy is better than no policy. And I'm just going to share one example before we go to a next question. And this happened recently, you know, with the VA Full Practice Authority. And I believe very strongly, as do many, and many of us have provided communications, our staff and others did, to the key stakeholders, that it is important to include all advanced practice roles. As you know, that isn't what happened. I have the benefit and the honor to sit on the Special Medical Advisory Group, and I had a chance, as others did, to speak with the Undersecretary, who now is actually a candidate for the VA, Undersecretary Shulkin, and talked about, you know, the importance of this issue. Of course, you know, when they backed off of nurse anesthetists, there were, and I was as well, disappointed. But we can't, and some wanted to. Some in the nursing community were so mad, they wanted to fire off these missives that were, one, not going to help us any, and two, and or well, if it can't be all, none. Well, we can't do that either. I mean, so again, I come back to that statement because I think in our profession we suffer just a bit from this. Don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. We want everything to just be perfect, and you know more than I even that the policy world is not perfect. It's messy. But we have to challenge ourselves. But I don't. It's not one or the other. It's both, because there are some that are challenging the value piece of it, and so that's a part of it. I agree. Very good point. Just a few minutes before wine.
Thank you so much, Deb, for that. So, any sense of the timeline of this think tank, and also, you know, to some strategy about continuing this conversation, these faculty. That teach policy and wanting to increase the rigor and how we can sort of keep this going or add to or anything like that?
Very good question. I'm going to turn some of the specifics over to the staff, but let me make a general comment and that this is our lifelong work, whether it's a think tank, whether it's other kinds of convenings. So I want to say broadly that I think we have to continue to think of what's the next opportunity where we as a community have a strong, a loud, and a clear voice about these important policy issues. And again, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I just feel so strongly about it. And I think we have to tweet because we're learning the Twitter counts too. So sign on to me, and I'm learning. But again, we just have to be as attuned as we can to this environment, we collectively, and then think about how we adjust our sails accordingly. We can't just say, it should be this way. And I've had a few moments like that where, one more, and I'm sorry, bear with me, but I want to go back to this SMAG meeting. So some of this, a Special Medical Advisory Group, horrible name for it, but it's essentially, in addition to Congress, what Secretary McDonald would tell you is he thinks it's his second board of trustees that advises the VHA. And I'm the only nurse that sits on it. I'm not bragging about that. We need more, but you know, it was quite an, I was honored to be there to help represent all of us. Some of the loudest spokespersons, which I was pleased to see for full practice authority, were some of the other members of SMAG, from big health systems, someone from the insurance world. So we have to think about how we help those individuals without seeing it as we're not carrying our own responsibility, but how we help them understand these issues as well. But anyway, so Secretary McDonald comes, he usually comes into these meetings. He usually gives a 10, 15 minute brief. Each time he increasingly stayed less because of all the fires he was trying to put out everywhere else. But he gave this great overview of everything that the VA had done. And the rule was either just released or going to be released. And he didn't mention it. And I'm like, well, we can't let that get away. So, of course, I raise my hand to thank them for, and they have done some great work, thank them for the great work. But take a moment to say, and I'd also like to commend you for, now I knew what they were proposing, and I knew it wasn't going to be all four, but I wanted it to be on the record that we supported. And so anyway, so I think that, you know, and so anyway, I commended the secretary, and Shulkin says, you know, we're going to talk about this later, and you're not going to be happy. I said, no, I'm pretty aware that, you know, there's some things that you want to do that we think are different. But then in my mind, so one of the points of, not defense, but the point for sort of going in the direction that he did was the undersecretary said, we're trying to fix access in the VA. And I can clearly point to problems where if we do this with these three particular roles, it's going to help. And whether you agree with his data or not, he said, but he wasn't convinced or compelled with respect to the nurse anesthetist. So then we, you know, our nurse anesthetist colleagues have been trying to continue to help. But we just have to keep figuring out, okay, what problem are you trying to solve? How can we bring you more data and stories and a constituent voice that helps you see? So anyway, I'm using it only as one example. I'm not sure exactly where we're going to end up with that, but I think that I had some, I can actually remember, I thought, oh, you know, this is streamed live. Am I going to get beat up by some of my nursing community? Because I've commended them, and they know that it's not all four. But I was careful and chose my words carefully. But we've had times where, and maybe it's not the norm, but it still happens more than it should, where as a profession, we think something isn't just or isn't right, and then we just get angry about it. And I get the anger, but we need to be careful about where that is. And so, anyway. So other... Does that?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Turn to the staff for the more specifics at ASIN.
I just want to thank you for that question. I can provide a little bit of the logistical insight around the work with the think tank.
Do you want to? I'll stand away from
it. I thought I had a loud enough voice, but I guess not. So thank you for that question. Just a little bit of the insight around the logistics and where the think tank is moving forward. So as some of you may have participated in this endeavor, back in December of 2015, was it? There was a day and a half of dialogue around bringing health policy faculty members to the table to think critically about what are some of those knowledge gaps and ways that faculty could better teach their students and some of those practices. So the work of that dialogue is still being formulated in terms of recommendations. The think tank was a one-time 18-month appointment, and which will go until October of this year. So the think tank is now commissioned with bringing those recommendations forward to AECN's board of directors. Mm-hmm. And I think that the ultimate goal is to make sure that these are disseminated more broadly to the community, because that's exactly what we need to be doing, as Deb said, building a better community.
The optimism. I mean, it's really nice to end with somebody so perky.
Some have told me it's a limitation on my part.
Oh, no, it's beautiful. It's really great.
It does help me, though.
It's really great. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
So I just want to, this is our closing now, and I encourage all of you to fill out the evaluations. Once you do that, you hand it to Antoinette or Brian at the desk, and they will hand you your certificate. And we really would like very specific feedback about how to grow the community, how to keep it together, next steps, what worked, what didn't work. We really want to hear from you. And then also, if you all have best practices, we heard so many today, assignments, whatever they are, you just submit them to nursinghealthpolicy.org or to me, and we'll make sure they get posted. We really hope that you join us in the next rooms for the next hour. We have a reception, and we have amazing 32 amazing posters, and we look forward to seeing you there. Thank you all so much for coming today.